Welcome to Slaking Thirsts, a podcast that's all about bringing the thirst deep within our hearts for love and communion to the heart of Christ, a divine heart, who is seeking our love and communion in return. The hope is that the two thirsts would meet and both thirsts would be slaked.
Well, friends, good morning. There's something so incredibly poignant right now in this season, this Easter season for me in these readings. Just a few weeks away from making my transition out of Wadsworth, out of Sacred Heart, I'm preparing to depart this community. And in the gospel that we have Sunday after Sunday, especially these last few weeks, we hear Jesus in his own Last Supper discourse. He's saying all these things to his disciples as he's preparing to leave them. I'm like, Lord, I get it. I feel you. Like, I feel such an affinity with the Lord's heart in these days. I just feel like I can feel his heart in this section of John's gospel, aching to give them everything he has, aching to give them everything. Like, the image I have is like a wrung out, like, dish rag. He's just giving every drop that he has to his beloved, to his disciples, trying to squeeze out everything before he goes. Like, he's now the alabaster jar. He's the alabaster jar who's breaking everything open, pouring everything out, spilling the whole contents out on the ones that he loves. And friends, I just feel the same. Like, as your father, as your priest, as your friend, as someone who loves you, I just love you. I do. I just love you so much, and I just want to give you every last drop I got in these last few days. So, that's what I want to do. I find it extraordinary, when I was praying through this gospel, I would find it extraordinary that here on this night before he's to enter into his passion, before he's entering his passion, this ultimate fulfillment of his life, the Christ, the God-man, who does nothing by happenstance, who says no word carelessly, he's talking to his apostles about friendship. He's talking to them about friendship, about love, about joy. Like, there's a million things he could have talked to them about. There's a million topics he could have covered. He could have spoke to them about missionary strategy. Okay, we're launching this thing called the church. Here's what I suggest. This is where I suggest you go. Here's where I suggest you avoid, right? He could have talked to them about what to do specifically after he got arrested, or where to go, or how to handle it. He could have covered anything. But he's talking to them about none of the practical stuff. He's talking to them about friendship, love, joy, right? As if these things, because they are, he's talking to them about these things that are the highest ideals in the Christian life, the most important things. He saved the best for last. This abiding in friendship with him, receiving his love, experiencing his joy, like a joy that nothing and no one in the world can give and nothing can threaten it. And that through this, that we would bear fruit in this world. Like, this is what he made us for. This is what he made us for. This is what he wants for us, to live in this friendship, to receive this love, and to experience this joy. Like, if you want to know the good news, that's the good news. Can I get an amen? Yes. That's the good news. But here's the bad news. And yet, we live in a world that, if the social scientists are right, our culture today, it's a culture in which what we see is it's the most depressed, most disconnected, most joyless, most friendless, most loveless generation that has ever existed. And these realities, these social markers, they affect every one of the, you know, everyone in the ranges of the social demographics of all ages, but no generation is more affected today by this than our youth, than our young people. Adolescents, teenagers, young adults, our young people, in numbers never before seen, feel utterly disconnected, utterly friendless, and utterly depressed. Here's the point I'm getting to. Like, if friendship with Jesus is the precondition for a life filled with joy, a life filled with love that results in joy, if friendship with him is the precondition for that, and if we have a whole generation of young people that don't even know really what friendship is anymore, or they've never really experienced authentic friendship, or they don't know how to be friends, then we got a really big problem on our hands. A problem that's beyond just social, societal issues. It's a deeply spiritual problem. Like, this might seem odd, you know, but this is what I want to talk about. Jesus says in this gospel, I no longer call you slaves because a slave does not know what his master is doing. I no longer call you the doulos in the Greek. I call you philos in the Greek. I call you friends. And why? As he says, because he's told us everything that he's heard from his father. Right? Jesus' understanding of friendship with us, it's born out of this, his understanding of deep intimacy, of vulnerability, of sharing of hearts. He has led us into his whole world. He's held nothing back. He's spilled the beans on the most intimate conversation there is between the Father and the Son. He's held nothing back. He's invited us in. That's what he says friendship is. And friends, my goodness, like the extraordinary gift of friendship. Like to have other people, to have friends, to have other people with whom you can just be at home with. Others that you can be on adventure with, you can share life with, to have that gift of being prized by another, preferred by another, seen by others, delighted in, finding that you are delightful. It's good for people to be around you. Friendship is, it's a foretaste of the communion of saints, which is multiple intimacy without promiscuity. That's how one spiritual author put it. It's chaste intimacy. That's what friendship is. It's chaste intimacy. To be with friends is the end in and of itself. Yes, friends do all sorts of things with each other, but the goal of friendship is not the things that you do, it's the being with. That's the good. Being with, delighting in the other, and discovering that I'm delightful. I'm bringing all of this up because I have noticed with increasing alarm and concern over the past, many years, I guess, but how all of those desires for friendship, for intimacy, for connection, for love and joy, how those desires have been hijacked. They're getting more and more hijacked and redirected for capital gains, really, in our modern technocratic society, that our young people, your sons, your daughters, your grandsons, your granddaughters, I see this everywhere. I see this in our school. I see this in our youth groups, both middle school and high school. I see this in the kids of families that I'm close with. I see this in conversations that I have with friends who are teachers, friends who are professors. I see this everywhere, that our young people, and this is no judgment, this is just observation, our young people don't know how to be together anymore. They don't know how to be together anymore without being alone on their devices in their own digital worlds. We're all alone together, is really what it looks like. And look, I'm not some like Luddite up here decrying, the evils of technology. That's not what's going on, right? I've got an Apple Watch right here. I got an iPad up here, right? Like, let's all calm down, I love technology. I do. I probably love it too much, right? I probably have a disordered affection with my technology. I'm on my iPhone probably more than I should, but what I'm saying is that these digital and technological miracles that make communication possible in a way that former generations would find utterly astounding and miraculous, like these devices, these screens, the social media platforms that live on them, Snapchat, Instagram, all of that, they're creating a world of so much communication with no more communion. So much more communication with decreasing communion. And communication and communion were always meant to go together, right? What God has joined, man must not separate. But we have split the atom, and the bomb of depression and loneliness is being detonated in the hearts of young people. And it's almost like because all of them are in it, all of them are on it, they're all sick, and they're all sick of it together, but nobody wants to pull out and be alone. Everyone just thinks that this is how it is, this is how it's supposed to be, this is normal, but the thing is, it's not. This is not normal. It's not normal, and it's not human. That's the problem. It's not human. The desire to be seen, the desire to be known by others, by friends, that desire is being replaced, it's being supplanted with the offer instead of being looked at. We want to be seen, and we're settling for being looked at, especially young ladies. You want to be seen, but you're settling with being looked at. You're transposing yourself online with pictures and Snap Stories and highly edited and doctored photos of you on Instagram, and you put them out there and you wait like a desperate fisherman waiting for someone to nibble at the end of the line to tell you that you're good and to tell you that you're valuable and to tell you that you're beautiful, to tell you that you matter, to like and comment, right? Or are our young men who, many ways, they, like, the days when boys used to, like, ride bikes together and get in trouble together and get in fights together and be crazy together and climb trees together, to go on adventure together, that desire in the heart of young men is being supplanted. And now they stay at home alone and get together and battle fake monsters and fight fake evil and accomplish fake tasks in video games online. Like, Snapchat is especially toxic in all of this. You never thought you'd be hearing a priest give a homily about Snapchat, did you? Snapchat homily on the sixth Sunday of Easter. All right. It's especially toxic for the hearts of young people, right? This social media platform that was launched in 2012, it's become an absolute juggernaut. If you're someone in church this morning who's never heard of Snapchat, you're probably of a certain age, and that's okay. We love you, right? But I guarantee you, your son or daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter, if they have a smartphone, they have it on their phone, most likely. It's an absolute juggernaut. It's an absolute juggernaut. It's got 800 million monthly active users worldwide, including 414 million daily active users. On average, over 4.75 billion snaps. Those are little pictures that, you know, they send to me. Now I sound like the old person. Okay. 4.75 billion snaps are sent on a daily basis. Daily basis. That's crazy. Annual generated $4.61 billion in revenue in 2023. Gen Z users, right? That's basically anybody born in the year 2000 and beyond. Gen Z users account for over 51% of Snapchat monthly active user base in the United States, more than any other social media platform. So why is this problematic? Because, like all of the enemy's tactics, this is all a counterfeit. Snapchat's a counterfeit. Instagram's a counterfeit. These social media platforms, they're counterfeits. It gives the semblance of connection without the reality of communion. It gives the semblance of being seen and delighted in without the reality of friendship and love. It gives the semblance of being with without the risk of really being vulnerable together. That's the problem. We were not made for the counterfeit. We were made for real things. Real love, real connection, real friendship, real love. All of that. Our young people, you're not learning how to live real human friendship. I hate to tell you, but it's true. You're not learning how to live real human friendship, how to take the risk of real vulnerability and real connectivity. And that's a problem because that's the precondition for love and relationship with each other and with the Lord. If we're called to friendship with Jesus, if this is the end and the ultimate, if I have no ability to enter into real friendship, real vulnerability, if I've become allergic to communion and connection, then I'm becoming allergic to heaven. I'm becoming allergic to my destiny, and that's a problem. The Christian life is the adventure of friendship with Jesus, of being with him, sharing with him, listening to what he wants to share with you, receiving and drinking deeply of his love, listening to his dreams and his desires for you, letting his voice animate and penetrate your story and your humanity to heal you and redeem you. Like, friendship with him is the precondition for human flourishing, for love and for joy, which we're all seeking. Look, I know it might seem odd. I've only got a few more weekends left here at the parish, and I spent one of them on Snapchat. But I feel, one, the Lord bringing me to this, and two, I just share this as your spiritual father, as someone who loves you and your families and your kids. Like, moms and dads, tune in right now. Like, we need a wake-up call. This is not condemnation. This is invitation. Like, I'm sharing all of this out of an immense love for you and as someone who does a lot of spiritual healing work with people, as someone who hears a lot of confessions, as someone who meets with and talks with a lot of teens and young adults. Like, please receive all of this in love. I've got some practicals. I want to give you some practicals. First is this. If your adolescent son or daughter, teenage son or daughter, who's still living with you, if they already have a smartphone, it has got to be locked down. It has got to be locked down as much as possible. I'm talking web filtering software, monitoring software. The best one I've seen is Covenant Eyes. If your kid's phone doesn't have Covenant Eyes, you're inviting all sorts of evil and problems into their world, right? Please do not think that by giving them the internet in their pocket and letting them keep it in their bedroom that it will just be fine. I promise you, it won't. It won't. Second practical, if you haven't yet given your son or daughter a phone yet, good, don't. Wait until at least high school. That's what all the social scientists are recommending. Wait until at least high school. The developing adolescent brain, it needs some space and time to be protected from things that it just can't handle. Especially Instagram, especially Snapchat. Third, you need to know what apps your kids have on their phones. What do those apps do? What does it give them access to? Who does it give them access to? Who has access to them? And you need to have the courage to have some tough conversations, if need be, about why certain apps need to be deleted. And, you know, sort of like random prison guard shakedowns, like, give me your phone, I'm going through it. Because your mom, your dad, you have that authority, you have that right. You have that right. Fourth, you have to know this. You have to know this. There is practically little else that predicts as well for teenage mental health issues better than whether or not your son or daughter uses Snapchat or has Instagram on their phone. There's a lot of variables, sure, that predict for mental health issues, but there is nothing in the literature that compares with this. You just have to know this. You have to know this. And if your kid, quote unquote, needs it to stay connected with certain groups and organizations, ask the adults, ask those coaches in those organizations to find another way to communicate with your kid that doesn't put them in harm's way. I'm so shocked by that. How many coaches and teams and organizations here in town at the schools that's how they communicate. That's terrible. That's irresponsible. Let's find another way. Ask those coaches to find another way. Fifth, adults who were not deformed by a digital technological society, that's us, right? We're sure, we were deformed in other ways, don't get me wrong, right? A lot of sugar cereal in our generation, right? We have to be the guardians and the stewards of our kids' humanity. Like, we have to help them to be human and to do real human things, right? They've never done this before. We have to help them to have real human friendship and real human connection and to talk about it and to model it. And which brings me to this. How are we modeling this as moms and dads? Like, what is your relationship to your device or to your phone like? What are you modeling? Chances are you're probably modeling a behavior that your kids are mimicking, which is an over-distracted, over-connected addiction to your phone. We need to have some tough conversations and recover the art of conversation. Let's be really okay with how difficult and awkward it might be to first try and do that as a family. Phones away, we're just going to talk to each other, old-fashioned style, you know? I ask a question, you answer the question, then you ask a question, then I answer the question. Remember that, everybody? Yeah. Let's bring that back. Let's make our houses talkative again. All of this, friends, it's an invitation to recover our humanity, to rediscover it, you know, for our young people to experience it in some ways for the first time, real human friendship, right? Grace builds upon nature. And if I don't know what friendship is, if I've never experienced it, if I'm not tasting it, if I don't know how to be a friend, then I have no concept of what's being offered to me in this gospel when Jesus says, I no longer call you slaves. I call you friends. If I don't know what friendship is, I don't know what he's offering me. I don't know the unbelievable good news that he's inviting me into. That friendship and intimacy with Jesus fills us with the love our hearts desire, which fills us with the joy that we're all looking for. Let's have the courage to do this. Amen.